Welcome to the SmackDown review for July 16th, 2021. Michael Ritter joins me in this special episode of the SmackDown review. He was live and in person in Houston, so he's going to cover everything that he saw and heard in person at the arena, including who he thought had the first, second, and third best pops of the night, and so much more, guys. This one's a lot of fun. Let's get everything going right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your number one source for the latest in WWE news and straightforward analysis. Are you ready to get this thing going?
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
Let's get this show started right now.
All right, everybody. We are about to get to Michael Ritter and myself breaking down SmackDown, the first show in front of fans in 70 weeks, 495 days, and we had 14,842 people in Houston, Texas, for this event. And it was such a breath of fresh air. It's almost as if all of the fans collectively said, oh my God, finally, right? And I'm sure the wrestlers, Vince, everyone involved, it was just a collective sigh on both sides of finally, we are back in front of fans where we belong. And without fans, pro wrestling specifically suffers because it's so reliant on crowd reaction, where the other sports in our world are not so dependent on it to direct where they're going to go, because it's truly competitive sports. I mean, just because you cheer for somebody or boo for somebody doesn't mean they're going to do better or worse. And there's no creative backstage, right? So pro wrestling was hurt specifically hard by the pandemic, given the fact that they just are so reliant on fan energy and their reactions to things to direct where they're going with creative. At least that's how it's supposed to work. Doesn't always happen, right? Vince sometimes decides, hey, screw you guys, I'm doing what I want. I know better. I know what you want more than you know what you want, right? But anyway, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on the WWE Podcast. We're going to break down SmackDown in just 1 minute, I promise. I just want to throw out there, if you're interested in joining us on Patreon, on the Discord server that I was on tonight with our patrons, where we were talking live in real time, watching the show together. We're going to do the same exact thing for the pay-per-view this Sunday, Money in the Bank, and it'll be on the Discord server that's available to patrons of the show. So if you're interested in joining us there and getting everything ad free, and it's only $1 for the entire library of 800 and some shows, plus the Discord server, plus a shout out. I mean, the list goes on. Patreon.com/WWE podcast. And there's other cool stuff as you go up in tiers, or you can join us on Apple Podcasts and hit that subscribe button. If you just want to be on Apple, that it's there too. $2.99 a month with a 3-day free trial for all of our shows ad free. All right. So, shameless plugging out of the way. Let's get to it, guys. Tomorrow, I'll be joined by Ashley Mann for the Money in the Bank preview and prediction show. Sunday night will be the Money in the Bank review show. So, quite a few more shows to go. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm sure big returns, a lot more to come, guys. It's just getting started. So, everyone, thanks so much for listening. As always, I'll talk to you next time. All right. Well, tonight is a very special SmackDown review. Normally, you guys don't hear me on this show. Normally, I let our brilliant co-host Michael Ritter take the lead and steer the ship, so to speak, and review SmackDown for you that drops on Saturdays. And tonight, though, is different. Tonight is different with the crowd being back, WWE making a huge deal out of it, as they should, but not just me joining the show is different, but also our co-host that does this this review actually attended in person in Houston. The very first time in 70 weeks or 495 days that they brought fans back, and it was awesome to see. So first of all, Michael, it's awesome to have you here and to be able to get an in-person review.
Oh, yeah, man, it's great to be here, Matt. I do want to apologize to the listeners up front really quickly just to make sure that that they know that I'm not in my normal setup. So obviously, if there is some audio differences from what I normally sound like on the SmackDown review, that's definitely why. But the SmackDown, man, that was a hell of a show. I got to admit, the fans were extremely into it from the jump. I mean, what I'm not used to is seeing the dark matches that happened before SmackDown. And there was actually two of those. They were all NXT wrestlers, though. One of them featured Austin Theory and some of the men participants. And then the second match was Xia Li and Aaliyah from NXT. And the fans went crazy for them, too. I mean, anybody who was coming out there at the beginning, it was just an absolute it was chaos, I guess you can say. I mean, whenever Edge came out, oh my gosh. And of course, obviously, we'll get into everything like that. But man, there were some pretty surprising pops I really didn't expect to hear.
There were. And I got to say, you know, as a viewer at home, it had the feel of a pay-per-view. I mean, and I mentioned this in the chat I was in our Discord server for patrons, and it did feel like a pay-per-view. It had that vibe. It had that anticipation. The set was new. So I guess all of the firings they did were to save money to buy this multi-million dollar set, however much it costs. So that was one of the investments they made. And did you feel that way too? Did you feel in the arena that it was had a pay-per-view quality vibe, or was it kind of like, oh, this is just SmackDown? Like, what was the vibe like?
It definitely felt like a pay-per-view, just given how invested the fans were. I mean, literally any match that was going on or any superstar that was coming out, you'd get a reaction. There was absolutely no indifference, I guess you can say, whether it was cheering or booing. Everybody that came out, the fans were absolutely invested, and it did kind of have that feeling that you didn't know what could happen. I mean, obviously, whenever you go to live events or house shows, which is what I'm used to going to when I see WWE live, is – you know no title changes are going to happen. You know that no storylines are going to be developed. They're basically just there to put on a show. Well, this felt completely different. You didn't know what was going to happen. Seeing in between commercial breaks kind of how they do things, that was also cool. But just as far as the show itself, it definitely felt like bigger than a SmackDown. I was a little bit disappointed by the lack of returns. So I definitely – I guess that kind of made it – it watered it down just a little bit, but I'm not being impatient in that regard. I understand that there's still more. There's still a lot more, and there's bigger fish to fry, like this Sunday at the pay-per-view and the Monday Night Raw. I think that that the surprise is not happening tonight. Yeah, it might have sucked for us, the people who were there in attendance, but if you're looking at it from the big picture, I think they might have made the right decision just to not confuse any storylines. I mean, if John Cena came back tonight, what was he going to do? You know, I mean, he couldn't get in between Edge and Roman or about to fight in 2 days. So I personally felt like I feel like the returns are more timely for the pay-per-view and Monday Night Raw.
That, you know, that's a good point to bring up, because a lot of us at home, and obviously if you're in the arena, you're wanting it even more because you took the time and money and effort to get there and physically be there, that you expect more. But even though us at home, we're thinking, okay, it's got to be, you know, out of those that kind of cluster of people that we believe are going to be returning, with Brock Lesnar, with Goldberg, yikes, with Becky Lynch, with John Cena, you know, among a few others hanging out there, that it's like, all right, they'll probably drop one of them here, but it actually makes sense that they didn't when you just pointed it out, that they are 2 days away from a pay-per-view. You can't start something massive with somebody returning if you're not going to do anything with it at the pay-per-view. And it wouldn't make sense. Like, you got to close it out. You got to kind of close this chapter, and then you open the new one starting next week with Monday Night Raw and SmackDown, and then you're off to the races. So I guess in person, my question would be to you, which person did people, maybe around you, or you got the sense, or people talking about who they thought would be that surprise return? Do you know that whatever people were talking about, like who they thought may make that big return?
Yeah, it was John Cena. Everybody around me was asking, is John going to come back tonight? Is John going to come back tonight? There was even chants during or before the show started, let's go Cena, Cena sucks. I mean, there was CM Punk chants. Fans are just excited to be back, so they're just chanting whatever. But I do feel like they were expecting John Cena, if anybody. Me personally, I thought that because obviously the Tamina being added to the Money in the Bank ladder match last minute, I thought that kind of got, or maybe put a fork in the road for a Becky Lynch return or something like that tonight to enter herself in that Money in the Bank. So I kind of as far as the women go, I kind of put them to the back of my mind, and I was more focused on guys like Brock or John Cena. And I kind of, I guess, just process of elimination. I'm pretty sure that Brock's going to go back to Raw. So I personally thought that it was going to be John Cena. And the fact that he didn't come back just tells me that once this Edge storyline is over on Sunday, maybe next Friday on SmackDown, we might be able to see John Cena show up.
Yeah, I think that's much, much more likely, because starting next week, we will officially be in SummerSlam season. And Drew McIntyre has said in interviews and through his cameos that he does that they are treating SummerSlam like this year's WrestleMania, because they're able to do it in Vegas at, I don't know if it's Reliance Stadium, whatever stadium is in Vegas that holds like 60, 70,000 people. They're really treating this like their WrestleMania, even though we had Mania. But so that tells you all you need to know about the names that could be coming back. And next week, officially, we're there, and we have a much higher chance of seeing those big, big returns, and probably one at Money in the Bank. But let's get back to the task at hand here. And I want to ask you, when Vince McMahon first came out, it seemed on TV like he was, I mean, kind of a hero's welcome. Yeah, there was some scattering of boos, but I'd say it was like 80, 85%. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I interpreted it, of just people cheering the guy, and they wanted to cheer, kind of sing along with his song, like the No Chance in Hell. And he gave a very quick, where the hell you been statement, and I expected a little more. You know, I expected, like, you know, just something like he gave us at WrestleMania, but it was nothing other than where the hell you been, and then he leaves. So how did you take this? How did the fans around you take this? Were they excited to see Vince McMahon?
I'm going to assume that the boos were coming from the higher sections, because every single person around me and every voice that I could possibly hear was absolutely losing their mind for Vince McMahon. And I do think it was kind of just, you know, that hero's welcome. We haven't seen him in forever. They weren't sure what he was going to do. So I do feel like a lot of it just had to do with excitement. The fact that he was coming out there usually means something big, but I kind of thought that he was going to bring multiple superstars out there. I thought they were going to line the whole roster up like they normally do on the stage and do that thing. But once I saw it was him by himself, I didn't know if they were going to use that specific segment as a way to kind of bring somebody back. Like if Vince was going to start introducing people like John Cena, or maybe, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin. I even thought in the back of my hand, like, man, I wouldn't be surprised if they did that. Just the fact that we're here in Texas and all that. But yeah, everybody that I was around, even myself included, we were just absolutely losing our minds for Vince McMahon. And me personally, just because I've never seen him in person before. That was my very first time at any event that I've been to actually lay my eyes on Vince McMahon. So I felt like that was a pretty cool little bucket list thing to do.
Well, there you go. The check went off. And yeah, I mean, he came out with his power walk, and it makes me laugh every time. As much as people vilify Vince McMahon for the things he does and the way he runs his business, I mean, you can't really say anything against the fact that he is one of the biggest villains of all time, if not the biggest, arguably. And seeing him do his power walk at 74 years old is still hilarious. But yeah, so he doesn't have much to say, but gets a big reaction from the crowd, and then fades off into the distance. And then here we go. We get Roman Reigns. We get the six-man tag with Roman and the Usos versus Rey and Dominic and Edge, of course, and we'll get to his reaction in a minute. But when Roman comes out, again, my reaction at home, or my interpretation at home, is it was mostly negative, and that's a good thing in my mind. Did you hear any cheering for Roman Reigns during his entrance?
Nope, I didn't. I mean, there were some people around me that were wearing Uso shirts that weren't booing, but they definitely weren't cheering. So I feel like, for the most part, fans were still, I mean, I don't know if it's just the fact that he's a heel and they're actually buying into the storyline, or if they still just don't like Roman Reigns. I wasn't sure to really distinguish exactly what it was, but even the people around me, whenever they were playing the video package before SmackDown even started, kind of just welcoming the fans back, every time Roman Reigns' face would show up on the Jumbotron, everybody would just start booing. And the people that were sitting next to me, I do remember hearing one guy say, man, they're still booing my guy. So I do feel like he was probably a Roman Reigns fan, but it was very few and far between, I guess you can say. It was definitely, I'd say like 90% or 95% of the entire stadium, because those boos were loud. And the stadium wasn't actually packed. I thought it was going to be a sold out show, and there was actually quite a bit of empty seats whenever you just looked around. And you would have thought that it was a jam-packed house, just given how loud some of those pops were. And Roman Reigns was definitely a guy who got the opposite end of that, and he got a lot of boos.
It's funny you mentioned that it wasn't sold out, because we're told many, many times on the show by Michael Cole that it's a sold out crowd from Houston, Texas. Like, he mentioned it probably 5-6 times coming back from commercial break or whatever. And they mentioned the number of 14,000 and change, however many fans were there. So I'm wondering, now the empty seats you saw, that wasn't for production or like the TV crew on the TV side setting up all their things, right? I mean, it was in places that they could have easily filled seats, is what you're saying.
Oh yeah, if you looked around, you could see empty rows, like not just seats. There were some rows that were being unutilized and some more rows that only had like 3 out of 12 seats that were filled. So I mean, it wasn't like my Atlanta Falcons, their stadium never gets filled up. Like, it's completely, if you look in the third quarter in the stadium, you could just see empty seats everywhere. I don't think it was to that extent, but I was going into the show, I expected, because that's all I heard too. Hey, it's sold out. You were lucky to get a ticket when you did, because man, it's hard to come by one. And I don't know. I mean, it might have gotten sold out, but if it did get sold out, not everybody showed up.
Yeah, no, it's possible. It's possible. I mean, we were told it's a sellout. I mean, I know WWE sometimes will inflate the number of people in attendance. They have been accused of that at several WrestleManias about breaking attendance records. And then, there's conflicting reports about how many people were actually there. But nonetheless, I'll take them at face value and say it's, quote, a sellout. Fine. You guys were a very loud crowd. And it was what I was hoping it would feel like. It felt like a Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania / pay-per-view vibe. But as we get into this match now, of course, the Usos come out. Roman Reigns comes out, and then we get, I think, the biggest pop I've heard from a live crowd, well, of course, in 70 weeks, but in a long time for anybody, and that was Edge. I don't think I heard a single person boo. I mean, this was 100% zero in terms of people cheering and booing. Was it as loud as it came across on TV?
100%. And I even said in that Discord chat that it was the loudest pop I've ever heard in person. And I did. I have it on my phone because I recorded him and multiple people come out just to kind of get that pop, because I wanted to hear it. And Edge, surprisingly, Bianca Belair was the second biggest pop behind Edge. And that kind of surprised me. I even had to look up to see, is she from Houston? Because that was a crazy pop. But yeah, Edge, without a doubt, the loudest pop I've ever heard. The fireworks, fireworks, you can say, the pyro that goes off whenever he throws his hands up and does like the rock and roll symbol, that was insane. I remember you saying that it gave you chills or goosebumps, and man, that you took the words right out of my mouth, because it was pretty cool to see, and you could just feel the energy in the stadium just go through the roof as soon as his music hit.
Yeah, it did. I mean, sitting at home getting goosebumps, I can imagine what it was like in person. And it was an interesting stat that I think Michael Cole brought up during the match, that for Royal Rumble 2020, when we had Edge return and he got the pop of the entire night, it was in Houston. And he said he's now returning to Houston. So I didn't know that. I didn't know. I didn't even make the connection that the Royal Rumble in 2020, when Edge returned, was actually the same spot that that he came back to. So it's kind of full circle here.
Yeah, and I actually didn't think about that either, but that is 100% right. It was in the Astro Stadium, but still, I mean, in Houston, a lot of the people were probably there. So I bet that was pretty cool for Edge getting to have that same pop. But yeah, I mean, I actually, that completely slipped my mind. I just didn't connect that at all.
No, I didn't, and Michael Cole educated me tonight. But so the match gets underway, and it seemed as on TV that they were into everything going on at the beginning. I mean, it was, and that's typical, right? Like for any show, usually the first person or few segments up at the beginning have the most attention. You have the fans are the most fresh at that time, but the fans really seemed into every single maneuver, even from Dominic. I heard some Dominic chants, if I'm not mistaken, which is cool. Like, that's fine. First, it was his first performance in front of a live audience since he was, as they quote said, he was birthed during the Thunderdome era. So the same kind of thing in person, that you guys were into every single move that was going on?
Oh, yeah. It was really hard not to be just at the very beginning. But as far as the Dominic chants go, I don't know if you could see on TV, but Rey Mysterio is the one who started those chants. So, I mean, just turning around, looking at the crowd, Dominic. I mean, no matter who he's cheering for, if you're sitting right there and Rey Mysterio is telling you to cheer, you're most likely going to cheer. So I feel like that might have had something to do with it. And someone hears somebody else chanting something, so they start. I never got the feeling that Dominic was over with the crowd or that they were, you know, really supporting him. I feel like it was just he was in a good situation being tag team partners with Edge and Rey Mysterio, who nostalgia was just kicking in crazy with the crowd tonight.
Yeah, no, and it certainly was, and I thought that the match was really good. I was shocked when they decided to have Edge's team lose, and I was thinking, like, wait, what? You know, they're going to bring this crowd up just to slam them down at the first show, but I understand why they did it, because it gives the team a win, which Michael Cole did say that the bloodline, he did say the bloodline, so I don't know if that was a Freudian slip or if that actually is accurate, but nonetheless, he did label them as the bloodline. And then, you know, the baby faces get their shots in, especially Edge hitting the spear on Roman. The crowd explodes. I heard that. And so kind of walk me through the end of the match. Were people kind of pissed off that the bloodline won, or like what was the feeling?
Yes, people were mad. As soon as Roman Reigns' music hit after the match was over, they were I don't want to say that they were just like, because obviously it was the first match of the night. They weren't just completely pissed off that Edge lost, but I could definitely tell that that they didn't expect it. I think that everybody there was expecting Edge to win, because whenever they lost, you could just hear like the oh, like it was obvious that it was maybe a little bit of a shock feeling that they thought that Edge was going to go over on Roman. And then, obviously, whoever goes over on the last show most of the time ends up losing. So that kind of confused me at first. And then, obviously, a little bit after that happened, Edge puts the attack on Roman Reigns, puts him in that crossface with the bar from the chair, and then holds up the championship. So that kind of let me know, all right, we're back on schedule. This is what's going to happen. The loss or the decision on who won the match was kind of confusing. But all in all, we got back on track.
Well, good. No, I really enjoyed, you know, the fact that they did win. I'm fine with. I was cool with the babyfaces then getting their shots in, and so the fans are ultimately left happy with that segment, because the final image was Edge spearing Roman Reigns, and the babyfaces, you know, get their licks in. So I do want to move on though to, well, we did get a big return actually. Now I'm thinking about it, you guys got Finn Balor, a return that I don't think a lot of people were thinking about. I knew that he was rumored at some point to come back to the main roster. It had been some time, and the crowd really seemed to be very positive, very, very positive for Finn Balor, as expected, as he interrupted Sami Zayn, who Sami Zayn went on this, of course, hilarious rant about his conspiracy theory, and he cut off you guys from singing his theme song at the very beginning, which I thought was a genius move if you're a heel. I know fans were – they actually would have gone along with it, because it's a very catchy song. I mean, it's a great babyface entrance music. And so I love how he just cut it off at the knees and then went into his rant. And then, of course, we get the returning Finn Balor. So what did you think of that segment?
Well, actually, because there was a daughter and a father who were both wearing Finn Balor shirts sitting right in front of me. And I asked after that, I was like, did you guys know he was coming? You guys are wearing the shirts. He's not on SmackDown. Like, because if not, then you must have been, you know, insanely surprised just to see him come out. But yeah, that was another one that the fans absolutely lost it for. And then whenever he does his theme song and he kind of throws his arms up and the lights get a little bit brighter, or I guess that's his entrance when he does that. But that's actually crazy to see in person how bright it really gets. And it could have something to do with the new set. Maybe that makes it brighter than what it normally is. But me sitting in the crowd, I was like, holy shit, like that's pretty bright. But one thing about this match I do want to say, my roommate actually sent me a video of the finish of, I guess it really wasn't even a match. I guess Finn Balor just attacked him, but he hit the coup de grace. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what it's called? Yeah, and he actually landed on Sami Zayn's neck. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, if you go back and watch that and slow it down, he landed right on Sami Zayn's throat. And Sami's obviously all right, but it was still one of those things like you don't really think about how dangerous that move is. But, man, if he could have definitely messed Sami up there.
Ooh, I did not see that. I knew. I remember watching it going, that wasn't the cleanest coup de grace that I've ever seen in my life. But I didn't notice it was on his neck. It looked like he kind of like slipped a little bit. It didn't look that great. But, yeah, yikes. That is very scary. That is very scary. So, but yeah, I will say his entrance, I've forgotten how cool it is to see in front of, you know, 15,000 fans, doing the throwing their arms out, which is always hilarious to me when you're crammed in a stadium of 14,000 people that, you know, people are getting probably elbowed in the face, right? So yep. You got to be careful of your neighbor.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And that was one where, like, I guess if I was ranking them, Edge first, Bianca Belair, and then probably Finn Balor and Kevin Owens kind of tie for that third place pop. But yeah, I agree. That's kind of one of those things. I personally didn't do it, but seeing everybody around me do it, it was pretty cool to see, not going to lie.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a very visually pleasing entrance, no question. So that is – it feels like, again, we were talking about, oh, no big returns, and – it's like, yeah, it's not the returns that we all are thinking about, that we're all waiting of Brock Lesnar, John Cena, where the hell are they? But this is, I think, a significant kind of circle back for Finn Balor coming back to the main roster. So, but speaking of Kevin Owens, you know, we have Baron Corbin come out, and he, Mr. Dejected himself, comes out and is continuing to grow out his hair, which is hilarious. And at first, and I put this on the Discord server, I said, do you guys think they're turning him babyface by trying to gain, like, sympathy or something? And then it was very clear to me that, no, that's actually not what they're doing, because he started to make fun of you guys in Houston and kind of took some subtle jabs at the audience. And Kevin Owens comes out and doesn't say a whole lot, just drops a stunner on him after Corbin had put up a CorbinFundMe.com site, which actually exists, guys. Like, CorbinFundMe.com is actually a real site. You can't donate. It's just a site. It's a static site with a picture and some text. But it's hilarious they went through the effort of actually creating it. So what did the crowd think of, and what did you think of this segment with Kevin Owens and dropping the stunner?
I feel like it was kind of one of those things that got the crowd back into it, because Baron Corbin, he actually came out during the commercial break and he was just standing in the ring. Like, the commercial break was going on and they were bringing out the ladders to set up around, like, in the entrance, and kind of just, you know, remind you, hey, Money in the Bank's this Sunday, so we need 12 ladders around the ring. But while they were doing that and setting that whole thing up, Baron Corbin was in the ring and just standing there with a mic. And he was standing there probably for like 6 or 7 minutes before he actually started talking. And I feel like it was just the people that I was around, they had no sympathy for Baron Corbin at all. They were literally just laughing at him and poking fun at him and joking about, like, the situation he's in and how there was, like, a barbecue stain on his shirt and how he's just, his hair is still just looking absolutely ridiculous. But I personally, whenever this segment was going on, like I said a little bit earlier, I feel like it kind of brought the energy back to the crowd, because there was a commercial break and Baron Corbin was kind of just talking. But once Kevin Owens hit the stunner, you could just feel it was like the light switch. Like, bam, we just got an energy boost. And Kevin Owens is definitely the person that that you wanted to see do that, because he's another one that I haven't really got to see much of in person. He kind of, right when I started going to WWE shows, live events, was kind of whenever Kevin Owens was still in NXT. And then when he got up to the main roster, I kind of stopped going for a little while, and just, you're not guaranteed to see any or see everybody whenever you go. You know, there's only a certain amount of people who go to the shows. So anytime I got to go to WWE, for whatever reason, Kevin Owens wouldn't be there. And
yeah. No.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. I was going to say, it is always a crapshoot. And certainly when you go, you don't know who exactly you're going to see. You have hopes and dreams, and you have ideas of who you may see and who could return and all that kind of thing. And Kevin Owens, I think I've only seen him a couple of times, maybe at most. I haven't been to a show since the Raw 25th anniversary in Brooklyn. But I would say that, yeah, Kevin Owens is one that is fun to watch live. The stunner is, as always, like, one of the most crowd-pleasing maneuvers of all time, obviously given its affiliation and long-running history of great moments with Austin. But, yeah, Kevin Owens dropping Corbin with that, it was fun. It, like you said, it kind of got me back into it at home, too. It's like, okay, cool. Like, it wasn't a wrestling match, but it was a moment that you're like, all right, like, it's a familiar move with a familiar guy that is beloved against a guy that is generally hated in Baron Corbin. And so, yeah, it was a cool moment, and I don't know if this is going to lead to anything. I would think probably Corbin versus Owens is maybe at SummerSlam. I don't, or this could just be a one-off and they don't do anything with it. But I do want to move on to the SmackDown Women's Championship with Bianca Belair, as you said, getting the second biggest pop of the night. It did come across pretty positive to me. To me, at home, it sounded like Finn Balor got a bigger pop than Bianca, but in person, obviously, sometimes it varies. So Bianca Belair versus versus Carmella was the women's championship matchup. And what did you think about this match and any notes from the crowd?
All right, about this match, and I will say just about the Finn Balor and Bianca, I think that Bianca might have got a louder pop for a smidge, but Finn Balor's was without a doubt way longer. The crowd was going crazy for Finn Balor for his entire entrance. Mm. I felt like with Bianca Belair, it was more so whenever her music first hit and she was coming out, I could hear. I was like, man, okay. you really don't realize it without fans being there. You kind of just gauge it off of what you see on social media and the pumped in crowd noise that they're doing. But whenever fans are actually there, you get the reminder like, oh wow, she really is over with these fans. Like, I didn't realize it until you actually are sitting there and you're hearing it and they're cheering for every move that she does. And that kind of just put it in my head like, okay, maybe I was a little off on how over Bianca Belair really is with these fans. And like I said, I had to look up there at the show, where is she from? And obviously she's from Knoxville, Tennessee, but I was like, is she from Houston? Because this is like a hometown pop that you would get. But yeah, I agree. Finn Balor definitely, like I said, they're right there rivalry with each other, I guess, if I can get it out. But about the match itself, I honestly forgot that it was a championship match because you don't – whenever you're there in person, you know, you don't get the little – images that come up on the bottom of your screen as we're going into commercial break that say, hey, a championship match is up next. You know, you kind of just come out and it wasn't until Hamilton or I'm not sure if it was Hamilton that announced it or if maybe the referee holding up the bell is when it actually clicked to me like, okay, this is a women's championship match. I better actually like buckle in here. And I feel like throughout the entire match and it went on a little bit longer than I expected, but I do feel like Bianca Belair kind of set it, or she established herself tonight as, in my opinion, one of the most over women's wrestlers on SmackDown. I can't really speak for Raw because obviously Charlotte and there's wrestlers over there who the fans absolutely love. But in my opinion, and of course, Sasha Banks wasn't here tonight. A lot of female wrestlers didn't make an appearance, but it was head and shoulders to – I mean, obviously, people like Bianca way more than Natty and Tamina, but any other women's wrestler that came out, it was just head and shoulders, like way different. The crowd absolutely loved Bianca.
Now, that's great to hear because, you know, you never know when they make a change at WrestleMania to a new champion how the live crowd is going to react. And I think Bianca is light years ahead of where Rhea Ripley is. I think they wish that they could duplicate the success and genuine fan connection that Bianca has with her fans that Rhea does not. And right again, she was successful in NXT, but it's a different animal sometimes when you come to the quote main roster. And I think that Rhea Ripley is learning that the hard way, that sometimes it's not going to be a quick, easy transition and you just grab the belt at Mania and people are going to gravitate towards you. But Bianca, I felt it at home too. You know, she's confident. She feels like she's settling in. Her crowd reaction tonight was really good. I was worried that maybe she might get some boos. I didn't hear any. And the match itself was okay. I don't know if you kind of felt the same way. I wasn't blown away by it. It was fine. Like I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It was the outcome that you expected. I think nobody, I mean, exactly zero people would have expected Carmella to win this match. It would have been absolutely just preposterous for Carmella to win this match. And, you know, it was funny with the announcers. Obviously you couldn't hear them, but they were talking about how with Carmella that, you know, it's not, you know, she may be beautiful, but she's one of the most dangerous and vicious women's superstars on the roster. I'm thinking to myself, no, she's not. You know why she's not? Because she talks about how beautiful she is all the time. And that's like her weapon apparently is her beauty, guys. It was ridiculous, but, I don't think this was a bad match. Did you think this was how did you rate the match in terms of quality? I mean, it was okay to me.
Yeah, I feel like the match delivered. It wasn't a bad match at all. I agree. I didn't expect Carmella to really have a shot at all to actually take the championship. But the thought did cross my mind as I was thinking kind of what Vince McMahon did WrestleMania 30, you know. I want to do something big. What can we do? Well, let's go ahead and take the streak off the Undertaker. We don't have anything else to do. Obviously, not to the same extent at all, but I kind of felt like, well, they're not going to bring back any returns tonight. Vince probably wants to do something big. This is the only championship match on the card. They kind of put it right in the middle of the show. I was like, I don't know. This could be a little part where they try to swerve us here, but luckily they didn't. I feel like they made the right decision. Bianca Belair, like you said just a little bit ago, she's miles ahead in terms of fans embracing her than Rhea Ripley is. And I feel like a lot of that has to do with Rhea Ripley having some bad dancing partners like Asuka, and then being in a situation with Charlotte where it's kind of, wait, am I the babyface? Am I the heel? What's going on? I feel like there's a more clear path for Bianca Belair on SmackDown than there is for Rhea Ripley. So yeah, they won their championships the same time. Well, did Rhea win her championship the same night as Bianca? I can't really remember
that. Yep.
Okay. Yes. So I feel like just them winning their championships on the same night, and obviously both being young, is probably where the comparisons stop with those two. I feel like they're just in different situations. If Rhea was on SmackDown and Bianca was on Raw, I feel like maybe Rhea would be, I don't know about just as over as Bianca, because the storyline and the build up to her WrestleMania match kind of had a lot to do with it, with building a good fan base behind Bianca. But I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing Rhea Ripley over on SmackDown and seeing if she had more luck there.
It could be, and it could be the fact that the writing team on SmackDown, the writing and production team on SmackDown, is just better run. I mean, I think talent has something to do with it, but I also believe that the fact that it's a two-hour show is certainly a big factor. You don't have to create 33% more content. That's a big deal, and a lot of times it's filler. But it's also, you know, again, the efficiency of that team, and I'm concerned about when they do the draft – if things get all mucked up on SmackDown, because SmackDown is such a far and away superior show that, you know, I'm worried the draft is actually going to kind of F this up. But we'll see. I mean, the draft now apparently has been rumored to be pushed from late August to October is what I'm hearing, right?
Yeah, I've actually heard that too. And honestly, I thought it made sense just because last year in 2020, the draft was that first week of October. So I felt like if they were to do it once a year like that, it doesn't always have to be in October, but if they did it just once a year, that way you have a whole year, you have a whole calendar year to get used to a roster, to actually let them build themselves up on a specific brand, because we all know that the good days of the brand split likely are over, of them actually taking it as serious as they possibly can, making it feel like two different worlds where paths don't cross until Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, maybe WrestleMania. And I feel like you're right. The draft definitely, I mean, they're kind of – it's a risk. You know, they're switching it up. They're going to get new characters over there. So, but as far as the draft being moved, I wanted it to be in August selfishly just because – I mean, you get it sooner. You know, we got new people to talk about. You get all these new matchups, and just drafts me. I love them. I think that they're exciting as hell, and I just like to shake things up a little bit. But since I've been covering SmackDown and it's been this one roster, there is a little bit of an attachment to it. And I guess two more months with the same roster, it's not the end of the world, I guess.
It's not, and we have big returns coming, right? Like, we have big returns that'll help keep things a little bit fresh for a couple months, and fans are back. I think it's enough to get us through to the draft. I really do. I think it's enough time to have people go, all right, like, I'm ready now for a shakeup. So certainly I think the draft will be welcome by the time October rolls around. So,
And really quickly, before we move on from the draft, I will say I just have a feeling, just given with the dark matches, Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Knox showing up, Toni Storm being rumored to come to SmackDown, I think that this particular draft, I know that we haven't seen NXT be involved like in the Survivor Series and the Royal Rumble this past year, but I think this particular draft, NXT is going to be involved pretty heavily, and that's just kind of a gut feeling.
You know, for all the time and effort they put into trying to tell us, especially Triple H, that we're a legitimate third brand, yet they speak out of both sides of their mouth because they're telling us that, and yet then this year they're not involved in the Survivor Series. They're barely involved in the Royal Rumble. We're taking people from NXT and bringing them to Raw and SmackDown versus people going from on SmackDown to NXT. Yes, Finn Balor is a rare exception, but the message is what you're doing is not matching what you're saying. So if that is the case, and they are really going to start doing that again and making it feel like a legitimate third brand and continuing to do that consistently, then yeah, that would absolutely be a huge deal to have NXT as an official part of the draft. So
and Mandy Rose as well. She went back to NXT this week. It's official move back to NXT. That's what I heard, or at least I saw from a pretty credible source on the internet, that it's not a part time. Mandy Rose is back on NXT long term.
Wow. Well, you just created many teardrops out of the eyes of fans around the world for Mandy Rose being pushed back to NXT. Which, you know what, if I was in her shoes, I wouldn't look at these things as a demotion. Like you can't look at going back to NXT as a demotion. You have to look at it as kind of a time to figure out who and what you are and take time to improve. Like, you know, so. All right. Shotzi and Nox, though, speaking of them, versus Tamina and Natalya, Shotzi and Nox end up defeating Tamina and Natalya for the second time in 2 weeks. And on commentary, I know you couldn't hear them, which is probably for the best, Liv Morgan and Zelina Vega on commentary, I'm a huge Zelina Vega fan, especially in terms of her personality, and usually her mic skills usually are very good. Liv Morgan, we're starting to really see the ascension of, and I'm behind her push as well. But on the mic together, they felt like two bickering schoolgirls fighting over, you know, a bus seat. Like it felt very childish the way that they were kind of attacking each other. I know, again, you couldn't hear this, but it was not fun to listen to these two. So outside of that, though, we got this victory from Shotzi and Nox, and Liv Morgan ends up standing tall at the end of this segment. So give me your thoughts.
Well, that's the weird thing about being there in person, because you don't get to see the instant replay. Yeah, you can look up to the screen, but you're always missing something in the ring when you do that. So you are going to miss things when you're at a live event. And I actually missed the end of this match, how Liv Morgan and Natalya, or how the women on the announce table, because I did see them down there, and I could see. I couldn't hear, obviously, but you could just see them. And normally, you know, if they put two people on opposite sides of the commentary table, like one person on one side and the other on the other side, you know exactly what's going to happen there. So that kind of told me, I could just see them kind of going back and forth, and Pat McAfee's facial expressions were letting me know, all right, they're obviously arguing with each other down there. But I didn't really see how Liv Morgan ended up getting involved. I'm guessing the tag team champions went out there after the match and kind of provoked them or something. Is that what happened?
Yeah. She was brawling with Zelina Vega on the outside, and then she got involved with Tamina in the outside, and then she eventually got rolled into the ring, and that's when things went her way inside the ring. So yeah, you didn't miss a whole lot there, but it ended up with just really surprisingly Liv Morgan standing tall, which I don't think that's ever happened, where in a multi-woman brawl you have Liv Morgan out of all people standing tall, and so to me it was a good thing, and it really sent the message to fans that you know, we hear you, and let's see how this goes with Liv Morgan. And a lot of people are picking her to win that Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. I think you could make a case for it.
Yeah, and I would actually love to see Liv Morgan. I mean, it's no secret that I'm a huge Liv fan, so I would actually love to see her win the Money in the Bank ladder match. But just quickly touching back on this tag team match, I wanted to add just how well, or I guess just as a tag team, Shotzi and Tegan Nox actually do pretty well together. But I love whenever NXT wrestlers come up, and especially at first, because you see them bring their A game. Like, they don't hold back at all. It's their first time wrestling in front of this type of crowd, and I could tell that these two women, I mean, I was close enough to see that there were some butterflies there, like especially Shotzi Blackheart. You could just tell her, she was just like kind of jumping before. She was like, she wasn't jittery, but it was one of those things like, I don't know if I have a different view here being this close, but I don't see her get this nervous before matches before. So I feel like that was pretty cool to see, just them be embraced by the fans, because, I mean, it's almost crazy that NXT is viewed as a third brand, just because how popular they are amongst all the WWE fans. And I'm really not one of them. You know, I'm not as far on the boat as you are. Like, I watch NXT probably like twice a month. Like, And it's not like I plan to do that. It just comes down to it, you know, with the other podcasts and stuff like that. Time is a real factor when it comes to that stuff. So, but all the fans who are just completely sold on NXT and they just absolutely love it, they are not quiet about it. And it wasn't different in the show tonight. NXT chants were going on in the dark matches whenever Aliyah and Zia Lee were fighting, and then the other dark match that featured NXT people. Just NXT chants throughout the entire arena. So I was kind of just like, man, NXT is popular as hell, and it's just crazy that Vince and the creative don't, you know, catch on to that and give them a little bit more, I guess, airtime on the main roster.
Yeah, Vince is probably sitting back going, what letters are they chanting? What the hell is XNT? What are they chanting? Right, like he may not even know that they have a third brand. Like, I mean, he clearly doesn't, and he probably just leaves it to Triple H to take care of it. I'm sure that Vince has very little say or really interest. It shouldn't be say. It should be just probably has no interest in really putting his time and effort into that when he has Raw and SmackDown and everything else. So. But that's cool. That's really cool that, you know, fans were in support of NXT during the show. If you heard NXT chants, and that is a really cool thing to hear. So, all right, Cesaro and Otis, and they had their backstage segment, or at least we had Chad Gable talk trash, and then Cesaro come up and say, "My name better not be on that list," or something like that. And then we got basically having Cesaro shoved away by Otis and punched a couple of times and then walks off. And that leads to a match between Otis and Cesaro, but it ends in disqualification as we had Gable get involved and going. He got swung 8 or 9 times, whatever it was. And then Otis comes in and just cleans house. So, I mean, I got to say, do you like this like quick elevation of Otis? I mean, now he's running through Cesaro, leaving him laying. And how do the fans react to this?
I don't like it. I love it. Just being completely honest, I absolutely love this version of Otis because it tells me that they're putting effort into it. You know, it's multiple weeks. He's squashing guys like Cesaro and Angelo Dawkins. I mean, I feel like this is what you need. If you're going to give somebody a character change, you have to go all in. Like, you have to do what they're doing with Otis. Make him get a haircut, shave his beard, completely switch up everything he's doing, and he feels different. He feels like he's never felt before. And like, as much as I do like what Otis is doing and all that stuff going on right now, I will say that this match in particular was probably the low spot of the entire card, or just the entire show as a whole. I just feel like, yeah, Cesaro got a pretty big pop too, and the fans were excited to see him, but that's probably where it stopped. I feel like as this was going on and Chad Gable got involved, it just wasn't, in comparison to some of the other things that happened, it just really wasn't up there, I guess you can say, with some of the others.
Yeah, crazy, right? Like, and Cesaro was a main eventing a pay-per-view like a couple of months ago with Roman Reigns, and people were all behind him. And now he's in a segment, as you said, that it is actually kind of, quote, the low point. And I don't mean low point disrespectfully, but there's always ebbs and flows of the show. And I don't know why fans should be super excited about this. There really is no reason, given that this was a cold start program for both guys. But I'm with you on Otis. I was a massive, just complete opponent of what Otis was before, with you know, the obsession with food and, oh yeah, and Tucky and all this garbage that was, I think, really, really hurting him, and actually ended up causing Vince to decide to take the Money in the Bank briefcase away from him, because I think even Vince saw the fans on social media, which is the only place he had to go to see what fans are thinking at the time, to say, hey, we got to take it off of you. And now he meets up with Chad Gable. I think the Alpha Academy is something that when it initially came out, I said, oh boy, this is just going to be one of those silly things they do. It's not going to really go anywhere. It's just going to be a comedy segment every week where eventually Otis is going to figure out that Chad Gable's just using him. And I think that was probably the original plan. And now they are a solidified team. And Otis is a big player now. It has turned completely to the other way from what we all thought it probably would be at this group's inception. So I'm with you. I'm all for what Otis is doing right now. And he's clearly right on a trajectory to main eventing probably in the next 6 months. For a championship, a singles championship, or hell, do I dare say a top championship? I mean, do you see Otis, say in the next 6 months, at least capturing a singles championship of some sort, Intercontinental even?
Yeah, see, actually, I'm glad you mentioned Intercontinental because I have thought about this before. And it would be weird having Otis versus Apollo because obviously heel versus heel. So I think that if Apollo loses this championship at some time in the near future, which I do feel like is possible, I feel like Otis is probably first in line to get that opportunity. I just feel like you have to see what he can do. You have to see how the fans react to him in that position, in that role. So, yes, I feel like it's inevitable at some point. You have to give him an opportunity. And just quickly on the whole Alpha Academy thing, I actually really like it. I do. I was kind of with you at the beginning. I was just waiting. Okay, Gable obviously has something up his sleeve. And at first they were kind of using the approach where Gable was giving – Otis advice during matches, and the advice that he was giving him would ultimately end up making Otis lose the match. That happened multiple times, and I thought that's what they were going to do with that. And then out of nowhere, his advice must have just started working or something, because it completely flipped the switch on Otis and he's a whole new person. But just quickly on the Alpha thing, that where I was going with that is you see WWE just absolutely throw things like that out the window. Whenever Jason Jordan left, Chad Gable had that whole little run as Shorty G and all that, and then eventually kind of made his way back to referencing the whole Alpha thing. And I just think that's kind of cool how they keep tying that to Chad Gable, and they didn't just throw it out the window, because I was actually a huge fan of American Alpha. Whenever they split them up and then did the whole Kurt Angle's Jason Jordan's dad, we don't even have to get into that, but I just thought that was too soon. And I think Chad Gable was best in a tag team. So the fact that it's the Alpha Academy now and he has a guy like Otis who is clearly on the way up, I just like it. I feel like if this is your low point of the show, like I said, it's not a knock on the actual segment. I mean, something's got to be the low point of the show. Whenever you have a pretty good show, likely it's going to be something good. So I guess it's just whenever you're comparing it to what else happened, it's easy to see this being towards the bottom. But that doesn't mean it was bad, because I really like what's going on with Otis, and I like how every week he's saying more things. He's taking it a little bit further. He's not just walking in place. So I can appreciate that.
Yeah, he is, and it's a slow progression on the mic, but a huge step forward in the ring, and the overall feel of this, the presence of this guy has changed. Amazing that you get rid of your beard and you're more intimidating, when typically it's the other way around, where beards are usually they're perceived as more manly and dominating. I'm not trying to get into too much psychology, but usually it's the other way around, and yet it has done the opposite for Otis. So,
yeah, I could tell you right now, as somebody who has a beard and who has shaved their beard before, you are 100% right.
It makes them feel like they're a child. Like, you look at them, especially if someone's had a beard for a long time and they shave it, it sometimes is laughable, because you're like, what just happened? Rather, it just, they went from a man to a boy. And yes, Otis does have a kind of a young-looking face. He's a bigger guy, so he's a much bigger face, but he has a young face, if that makes sense. I don't know how else to describe it, but he's got such a kind of a mean, mad face. Like, he's got he's very emotive. He knows when he makes his frowny face that it actually comes across as mean, even though his beard is gone. I think it's actually accentuated with his beard gone, because you can see all, like, his entire face when he does his kind of mean mug. I don't know. I'm diving into this way too much, but I think it's a big deal for Otis here. And he's in a better spot now than he's ever been ever in WWE ever. So this is really good. And for Chad Gable too. So, all right. Any other thoughts on that before we get close to wrapping things up here with the, I think this is the final match, but anything
yeah.
else?
Yeah. Yeah, you'll notice that covering SmackDown is a lot faster than covering a Monday Night Raw, just having the 2 hours.
All of a sudden it just popped up on me, like, wait a minute, I feel like there should be like 10 more things. Yeah, Monday Night Raw is a bear, and I don't even watch the full 3 hours. So, all right. Well, Seth Rollins, Shinsuke Nakamura, Big E, Kevin Owens. I mean, like, so I got to say, Seth Rollins, I know he had that interaction backstage with Edge, and we all know at this point it's absolutely inevitable that these two cross paths, and Seth likely screws Edge at the pay-per-view. I think we can all see that coming a mile away, and I'm okay with it being predictable. I'm fine with it being predictable because it's, I think, the right thing to do to protect Roman from losing. And it's also getting Edge and Seth back into a program for the first time. So I thought the backstage segment was good. I like what Seth has done. His outfits are getting more ridiculous by the week. Hilariously ridiculous. And I mean that complimentary. But Seth Rollins defeats Shinsuke Nakamura, Big E, Kevin Owens in a fatal four-way match here. And Big E, I got to say this one thing, and then I'll toss it to you. If they don't get Big E away from being just an extension of the New Day on SmackDown, he will never, ever achieve what they are intending him to achieve. You cannot have him come into a promo and start talking about, you know, New Day rocks. I mean, you're not in the New Day anymore, dude. We all wanted you to be a single star, and you're continuing to reference the group that is on a different brand. I could rant about that, but go ahead.
See, I feel like with the whole New Day situation, I almost a little bit of a comparison here that I use is it's almost like you want to break up with a girl, but you want to end on good terms, right? You don't want to hate each other or anything like that. You want it to be a peaceful, nice breakup where you all go do your own things and possibly remain friends. And I feel like that's kind of what they're trying to do with the New Day, but it's not working. I feel like with that, somebody has to turn. And I know they said, well, you don't have to do that when you break up a group. But I think with this particular group, with how long they've been together, with how they're all so similar in their characters, you have to force them to turn on each other just for it to, like, so they can hate each other. That's just, I feel like that's the only way that it's going to be a true split up. And I think WWE is learning that the hard way. I feel like they might have planned for Big E to just completely separate himself, but they realize how easy it is and how natural it is because there was never that turn. He's still friends with them. Why wouldn't he come out and support his friends and all that? I don't agree with it, but I guess I can see, like, why they would do it because there wasn't that turn. So as far as the match, this one, it was quicker than I thought. It being the main event and a fatal four-way match, I expected it to go on pretty long, but there was a lot of spots in it. And I actually remember you mentioned one in the Discord chat where Big E does, like, the spear through the ropes. Oh, that's a very dangerous move.
It's so – I cringe. And he's done it so many times, you think I'd get used to it. But he does not have any business doing that. I don't care just because you can do it that you think you should do it. That is stupid logic. There's a lot of things I could do that I should not do, right? Like, just because you can do something does not mean it's the right thing to do. And I know the Big E is it's part of his repertoire. I get that, but it is such a high risk move, especially for a guy that's 260 pounds of all muscle crashing down into somebody in the outside of the ring. I really hold my breath every time he does it. And I look to the referee. Is he going to throw up the X sign? Is someone dead? I mean, I really hold my breath every time he does it. Do you feel the same thing about when he does this? Like, it's just so unnecessary.
100%. And it was the very first move in the match. Yeah. Like that was it. Like that, the bell rang and he did that. Obviously, Seth Rollins was trying to leave, but still, I mean, we almost didn't get a match. Had that gone wrong, and the referee did throw up the X, we would have gotten no match. So I feel like, dang, I mean, you started off with that, and it's just weird considering how much of a risk that is and how dangerous of a move that is. Whenever you look at his finishing move, like, you're gonna do that at the very beginning of the match, but have that be your finishing move? Like, are you kidding me? So I guess just in comparison, it's like he's clearly got things in him. I don't know what it is about this finishing move, but it's seeing it in person just didn't make me feel any better than seeing it on TV. I tell you that.
In person didn't. If in person didn't help you, this move is doomed. The big ending is. I cannot stress this enough. How soft this finishing maneuver looks. A clothesline has more effect. A suplex, a simple overhead suplex, has more of an effect on me than does the big ending that is essentially just you picking me up, holding me up, and then I land on my belly nice and soft. I mean, it's ridiculous. But Big E ends up getting pinned by Seth Rollins after a stomp on the ladder. Kevin Owens, of course, does his insane jump off of the ladder and into Shinsuke Nakamura from the top of the ladder. I mean, this guy just has no regard for his body whatsoever. And so that was the big spot for Kevin Owens. But, of course, Seth Rollins gets the victory, and somebody always has to and this isn't a knock on Seth, but WWE, it seems as if every single time they do a Money in the Bank ladder match every year, they have to have somebody go up and hold up the briefcase or point to the briefcase that isn't really the real one. And it's just, I don't know. But anyway, Seth ends up being victorious, and that can probably tell you that he won't win at this won't win Sunday, but who knows?
Yeah, it's actually pretty crazy too, because Seth was my pick. Like, I legitimately thought that because of the references that the announce team was making in previous weeks, they kept saying how he was one for one. You know, he's only been in one Money in the Bank ladder match and he won it. So basically just the efficiency, I guess you can say, from Seth Rollins and how he cashed it in. I mean, he's one for one and he had the biggest cash in WWE history. So I feel like the stars were kind of aligning him, trying to work his way back into that picture. I feel like, why not give him the thing that got him in that picture in the first place, the Money in the Bank briefcase? But I can see other superstars winning. Matt Riddle has a good chance. Drew McIntyre, even though I would absolutely hate that, he has a chance to win. I think Big E does as well. So I feel like there are superstars, because Big E went on an interview this week. I'm not sure who he said it to, but he said that Drew McIntyre is the favorite or something like that. And he like admitted, and I just never hear wrestlers talk about that. So I thought that was kind of weird. But I didn't know what to take from it, if I should say, or if I should actually take Big E's word for it, him basically dropping a hint that, yeah, Drew McIntyre is going to win, or if he's trying to, you know, butter up Drew so maybe he can sneak in there and have all the fans thinking it's going to be Drew or somebody like that, and he actually gets the win. But as long as it's – I don't really know. Isn't Morrison in this one, John Morrison?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. See, so as long as I feel like – if anybody on Raw wins it, I hope it's Matt Riddle. And I really wouldn't care if any of the four here on SmackDown, whether it's Shinsuke, Seth, Big E, or Kevin Owens, I wouldn't care if any of those guys won. I would believe it, and I could see the logic behind any of them. But the John Morrison, and I think even Ricochet might be in this match. AJ Styles, he's a worthy of – isn't AJ Styles in it, actually, now that I think about it?
I don't think he.
Yeah, never mind. Yeah. He's not. He was in that triple threat match to qualify, but he didn't. He didn't actually win. So, yeah, I'm not nearly as caught up on Raw, I guess you can say, with everything that goes on over there.
Yeah, no, Raw's a mess, but you know, you're right. But you know, as far as Seth goes, though, I mean, just because he was portrayed as the winner this week, and you got the upper hand on the pay-per-view before the pay-per-view, yes, typically logic is that that means that they're going to lose the pay-per-view. I mean, that's WWE booking logic 101. That's not always the case, though. We've certainly seen exceptions to that rule. And I think Seth could be that victor, and we could have a fun little time with Seth carrying the briefcase. I don't know if that's going to be the case, though. No pun intended. Briefcase. I don't know if that is, because you do have guys that have a better case to be made for winning it, like Riddle. Drew McIntyre, I know that people are thinking, well, he could, right? And then he could go to SmackDown. I think unless you really want to turn Drew McIntyre heel, if that's your intent, don't have him win it. Because, yes, he can't face Bobby Lashley. We know that due to their last matchup at Hell in a Cell and the stipulation attached to it. But if you want to turn Drew McIntyre heel, there's no faster way to do it than have him win Money in the Bank. Because you're going to have him for what? Until the draft, hold on to it for 3 months. And carrying it around for 3 months and waiting until he gets to on the same show as Roman Reigns to challenge that person, I mean, to challenge him. And again, the thing is, you're going to be reminding fans every week if he wins, oh yeah, he's still in the title picture. He could win it at any moment. He can cash at any moment. So he would be in the title picture without being in the title picture every single week. It would be a really, really bad move. And I think actually Jinder Mahal will probably have something to say during this match, end up screwing him where Drew's just about to get it up and, you know, his fingertips are unhook the briefcase and Jinder Mahal ends up dropping Drew McIntyre, probably to some cheers. I wouldn't be surprised if Drew McIntyre gets a few boos, not overwhelming, but a few boos once he's up on that ladder within inches of the briefcase.
I totally agree. Drew McIntyre is going to get that spot, and I'm going to be listening very closely to the crowd in Fort Worth to see exactly how they react to that. But you mentioned Seth Rollins and him possibly winning the Money in the Bank ladder match. and I kind of want to make a comparison here or say something that I hope it makes sense. So stay with me. But basically, I feel like as far as the briefcase itself, I feel like it could do more for Matt Riddle if he were to win. Like the briefcase itself would do more for Riddle if Riddle were to win. But I feel like Seth could do more for the briefcase if he were to win, because the briefcase, I feel like it would be in the main event picture, and Riddle kind of is creeping into that main event picture over there on over on Raw, but I feel like that's still Bobby Lashley and whoever is next for him. So before Riddle kind of peeks in there, I feel like whether it's Brock Lesnar or whoever comes back to fight Bobby Lashley, that's clearly the main event picture. Seth Rollins, he's already got one foot in the door, challenging Edge, mentioning Roman Reigns multiple times, and threatening to cash in if he wins on Roman Reigns or Edge. So I guess just that's kind of the way I look at it. If you want the briefcase to make the wrestler, Matt Riddle's your guy. But if you want the briefcase to mean something and it be featured more or actually be more important, then I feel like Seth Rollins might be the guy to win, because what he can do with it, and I'd be interested every week. I could tell you right now, just putting the thought in my head, hypothetically, if Seth Rollins were to win, I know my gut feeling is telling me I would be super into that. So I guess that's kind of what I wanted to say there, just about the briefcase.
It's not a bad point. I think it's fair to say that Seth Rollins, while he was positioned as the person getting the advantage on the go-home show to the pay-per-view, and logic is not on his side, it could be very fun with Seth helping make the briefcase even further by, you know, reminding us, and WWE did that a lot tonight, showing us WrestleMania 31. And as Michael Cole said, I think 3 or 4 times on commentary, he referred to the heist of the century. I mean, it was one of the best lines that Cole has ever said, and he repeated it several times on the show. But I think with Seth Rollins and that history behind him and that big moment, the biggest cash in of all time, Seth carrying that briefcase, if he wins, I don't think you have to worry about necessarily heel versus heel, because if Roman Reigns retains, and I think he will, and Seth wins the briefcase, and you could have a babyface eventually take it. Say somebody takes it off him at SummerSlam. Say John Cena ends up taking the championship off of Roman Reigns at SummerSlam. And then you have Seth Rollins come in and cash in on the babyface. Like, so you can and do it immediately. You can do it. Just because a heel is champion doesn't mean you can't have a heel carrying the briefcase, because there's ways to get the championship off the heel and then immediately have the heel take advantage of a weakened babyface coming out of a grueling match to then cash in. And then you're back to a heel champion. So without actually having to do heel versus heel.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense, and especially if there's logic behind it. Like, people would get behind Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. I feel like obviously you'd want one to be a babyface versus a heel, but with the story that they have, with both of them being in different spots than the last time we saw them face off, I feel like Seth Rollins, it just makes so much sense giving it to him and just the things he can do. I mean, he's without question, he's a heel. So, and we all know it makes more sense to give the briefcase to a heel, because I mean, that's just what it's made for. So I guess just Seth Rollins is the one person just I can't take my mind off of whenever I'm thinking about this Money in the Bank ladder match, but Riddle is another one. So I feel like if you're going to go heel, give it to Seth. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go babyface, you got to give it to Riddle.
Right, and Orton, Randy Orton's been missing for like 3 weeks, so perhaps Randy Orton comes in, helps Riddle, and then Riddle gets the briefcase, but then Orton expects in return that if Riddle cashes in and wins the championship, that the first person that he faces for that belt is Randy Orton. So there's something in it for him. I think we'll see Randy Orton on Sunday. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Obviously some other returns, Sasha Banks, and you know, we have a full preview and prediction show coming tomorrow night. But one thing I do have to ask though too is, were you surprised that Roman Reigns didn't talk at all tonight, and it was just all business, and Paul Heyman kind of speaking for him with the Caleb Braxton interview? My thought is that it is a little coincidental that they want to hold back Roman Reigns another week, give him time to recalibrate before he gets in front of a live audience and starts speaking, or is it just coincidence that he didn't end up speaking just because that was the creative tonight? What did you think?
See, Matt, that's why you get paid the big bucks, because I didn't even realize that. And it makes total sense why he wouldn't. I mean, because like I just said, I didn't even realize that that didn't happen, that he didn't speak on the mic, because it just – I guess I was just so excited to see him that I just – it didn't really click to me. But you're right. I feel like that might have been – I'm just – are they scared to put Roman Reigns on the mic because they don't know what the crowd's going to do? That kind of – I'm glad you brought that up, because now I'm thinking about it, and it's – I'm intrigued, because I want to know if it's a confidence thing. Like, do they think Roman Reigns can handle a real crowd? Because the only other time that a crowd's been there since he's been in this role was WrestleMania, and he clearly didn't have any mic work there. So that is a good thing to point out there. And I'm definitely going to have to pay attention next week when they're in Cleveland.
Yeah. I only realized it after the show, and I'm like, oh, cool. Like that was a really good show. And you know, it had at least one, I guess we'll call it a return, and I guess a circle back for Finn Balor coming back to from NXT after a few years. And so that was big. But I thought to myself, wait a minute, we didn't even hear Roman speak like at all. And every show outside of the one show he took a vacation, whatever storyline they were going there. But outside of that one vacation SmackDown a few weeks ago, they have had Roman speak many segments throughout the show, backstage with the Usos or in ring with the Usos. And tonight it was all business, and that's fine. It's just a little bit of a happy coincidence that they didn't have Roman speak at all. And I'm like, like you said, are they still not, or is Roman still not 100% confident? I mean, he's had nearly a full year now as a heel since late August last year. And I'm like, I don't know. Like you said, moving forward, I'm very interested to see if they protect him, they coddle him like they did as a babyface. He was like one of those guys that comes out, cuts a promo, and you know the second he starts cutting a promo, within 30 seconds, someone's interrupting him so he doesn't have to do anything long form. I'm very interested to see, like you said, how they manage his live mic time moving forward.
Yeah, because you can give them the benefit of the doubt for one show. You know, you can kind of just – or you can say to yourself, well, was it a coincidence, or was it just a night that he just wasn't supposed to talk? You know, I guess that happens sometimes. I don't really understand why you would do that, especially whenever his music hit first. Where I was sitting, you can't see them exactly right when they come out because there's cameras there. You kind of have to wait till they get closer to the ring. And whenever he got closer to the ring, I saw that he didn't have a shirt on or nothing. I thought it was going to be one of those typical SmackDown segments where the show opens, Roman Reigns comes to the ring with Paul Heyman, and he cuts a promo. And I thought that 6-man tag match was going to close the show. Whenever it opened the show, I was blown away. So I guess that could have something to do with it, that he got his work done early, and we didn't have the match at the end of the show where during the show he kind of – there's those segments that cut back and kind of just let him talk for a little bit where he's sitting down in that chair. Paul Heyman's over his shoulder and one of the Usos is there. So I guess you're right. We kind of just have to wait and see how their approach is to this, because it's definitely something that you have to keep an eye on, because Roman Reigns was not loved by the crowd when he was a babyface. And now that he's a heel and we really haven't gotten a chance to see him, I mean, we've gotten two shows, the one tonight and then WrestleMania, where fans have been there. And while he comes out, it's all booing. But I want to know, when he's talking on the mic, are they going to actually listen to what he's saying, or are they going to just do what they did the last time? He had weekly, you know, mic segments on Raw or SmackDown or whatever, and the fans were just absolutely decimating him.
And they can't protect him forever. And I said that as a babyface, yet they protected him forever from any kind of harm. Which was just painfully obvious. But as a heel, he's done so well and feels so much more comfortable out there as a heel than he does a babyface, that maybe tonight was, if it wasn't a coincidence and this was strategic, that they said, all right, this is the biggest star we've had in a long time. Turning him heel just did wonders for us, for him. And this is the biggest storyline, most intriguing storyline we've had in many years. Let's take a kind of halfway. Let's get Roman back in front of a crowd. Let's push him in the pool, but don't push him into the deep end yet. And get him out in front of a crowd. You know, get kind of grease his gears again. Get him used to being in front of 14, 15,000 people, and then we'll slowly start to incorporate mic work, which they know, and everyone knows, was not his strong suit as a babyface at all. I mean, that was. that was one of the most uncomfortable parts of his babyface just persona, was the fact that he just could not cut a good promo at all. I mean, he had some bad suffering succotash ones, tater tot ones. We all know the famous ones. But in general, he was not good as a babyface and felt very uncomfortable on the mic many times. And so perhaps they're saying, let's give it in front of a crowd, and then we'll start to incorporate mic work slowly throughout the weeks, as you know, live crowds are now back. So
yeah, it's definitely something I'm going to be paying attention to, because obviously Roman Reigns is such a huge part of the show, and that's why when you said they can't protect him forever, I mean, especially not in this role. I mean, eyes are on him. We've all said how he's carrying the company and arguably the whole wrestling industry as a whole. Roman Reigns is just his role, his character. You can feel how you feel about the storyline, because I do know people that aren't high on the storyline. They're over it. They think it's annoying, repetitive, and they're just tired of seeing this version of Roman Reigns already. And I'm like, man, like, what are you talking about? You know, like, it's for the longest time, we saw a version of Roman Reigns that some people liked only because they were diehard Roman Reigns fans. I was one of them, but I still understood, like, all right, I get why these guys are booing him. You know, like, I don't really like it, but I understand. You know, I wasn't like getting upset at the fans or anything like that, because there are fans out there that they get super offensive and like protective over their favorite wrestlers. I'm like, man, you gotta chill out a little bit. But yeah, I mean, they just can't do it. You know, they can't protect him forever. And I feel like with Paul Heyman on your side, you should be good to go, dude. You've had a whole year and you've done great. Like, he's done great my work. And I know that Paul Heyman is responsible for everything. You could just tell by his demeanor, the way he speaks. And I know he got new teeth, but I don't think that has anything to do with it. I mean, he's way better on the mic. And just a little bit of a side note here, seeing him in person, because he's, I mean, I've taken a picture with Roman Reigns before, so I know how he used to look. And it's an obvious difference. This is by far the best shape he's ever been in. So I just feel like, with what Roman Reigns is doing right now for the company, it doesn't make sense to change anything. You know, I mean, give him the mic time, let him learn. I mean, just throw him in the deep end. I feel like he's had enough time. He's a veteran. There's no reason why they have to protect him. I feel like he's good to go.
I hope so. And then they can't do this forever. And again, we'll chalk it up to happy coincidence. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They started with what many people would consider a main event. And I understand the reason why they started out with a match like that, because it's the first show back for the fans. Let's just give them a bust ass match with big stars in it to open the show. I agree with that completely on their end. They could have easily waited for this to the end of the show, but they didn't. And I'm cool with it. It worked completely for all involved. So any other final thoughts on the show, or any chants, or any notes from in person that maybe I didn't ask that were interesting and noteworthy?
Not really. I mean, the only thing I have written down was just that Finn Balor stomping on Sammy's throat. Obviously, the Bianca Belair getting her huge reaction made me feel like she was a Houston resident, but I feel like we covered it for the most part. I mean, just the chills that I got whenever the lights went out. Because one thing you don't notice is there's literally a clock. Like, you know how the hard camera, or maybe not the hard camera, but whenever the wrestlers are actually wrestling in the ring, they have that specific angle that they use where they only show one side of the crowd. You know, that one, if you're walking out to the ring, it's the crowd that's on the left side. And on the right side, because remember, I was behind the commentary table, so I could see both of those sides. And on the side that they don't show the camera, there's literally a clock there that is just a digital clock that has, you know, it's like 6:30 and they started the countdown or whatever. And I mean, it's not like a countdown clock. It's a real like time clock. Like, it tells you what time it is. And that's that's one thing that I've never seen before. Just being in the crowd, I was like, wait, what the hell? Like, there's a lot of things that they don't show you. That you can't see from the camera angles that you can see whenever you're there, obviously. But and then just the pyro, the fireworks, that is so loud in person. Like, you don't realize how loud it. Like, I don't understand how they don't jump. Like, the people who are, I know they're expecting it, but still, that's crazy loud.
Yeah, if you are and I've thought about this too, and if you're like a war vet that's come back from overseas and you have PTSD or something, this would trigger it. I mean, it's unbelievably loud. It doesn't do justice on camera at all. No, it is extremely loud. And I remember even when Kane would come out and have his four ring posts of fire, I remember how hot that was. People don't realize how hot that was. Or even on stage, when he'd have his flames come out. So the pyro and the fireworks, all that kind of stuff they have, it is louder and hotter than you think at home.
So 100%. But yeah, I guess just quickly before I go, I just want to say that I'm extremely excited that we're back to normal. I mean, I felt like, and the people around me even agreed, I feel like we set the tone here in Houston. I feel like the people in Fort Worth now, it's y'all's turn. Let's see what y'all got. I really want to keep this train going. You know, I want them to know not only that Texas is a pretty loud state and passionate about wrestling, but just everywhere. You know, next week they're going to Cleveland. Like, I told the people around me, I was like, look, guys, we got to set the tone here. There's people watching from around the world who are interested in how we react and how we're going to handle this. Obviously, be yourself, but set the tone. You know, boo who you're going to boo, but boo at the top of your lungs. Like, I was just trying to let them know, like, it's a privilege to be here. And some people might have taken it for granted for the past 18 mm-hmm. months or however long it was. But I made sure that they all knew that, man, it's definitely a privilege to be there.
It is, and there's such a difference between the manufactured crowd noise from a production truck and real live human beings in person. It's the same noise, but there's a feel to it. I don't know how to explain it other than it's just different. You can record a crowd noise and then play it back when you feel it should be there, but it's different when it's live and you hear it in the moment and that crowd tells you what they think, good or bad. It's so much different. The final question I'll ask is what were the demographics of the crowd that you saw? Were there a lot of families? Was it mostly men 18 to 40? Like what was the general consensus that you got for the people that were there?
I'll probably say that over 50% of the entire crowd was men in their late 20s to early 30s. And then there were definitely a few families. Obviously, you're going to see groups of kids and stuff like that. But I didn't really see as many old people. And I know, I'm not taking a shot at old people or anything like that. But there are some old people that like to go to wrestling shows. And I didn't really see a lot of them. But I feel like, yeah, I mean, for the most part, it was late 20s, early 30s. Occasionally get your group of family. But I didn't see as many kids or at least on the floor where I was sitting, there really wasn't that many kids. But obviously, probably in the nosebleeds and the higher sections, there probably was kids everywhere. But I feel like, for the most part, a lot of 30-year-old guys.
All right, so people my age, right?
Like, and my age too. Yeah, everybody that I was around they seemed like they were similar in my demographic. So I was kind of, it was easy to talk to them. It was easy to kind of gauge what they were going to do. Sometimes they catch you off guard, like, oh, I didn't expect you to boo that guy. But hey, I mean, everyone has their own opinion. So it's always fun to be a part of it.
Oh, great. I mean, I'm jealous you got to go to this show. I know there weren't the big, big, big returns a lot, I'm sure, that you expected and others expected, but you guys still got a pay-per-view quality show. I really do believe that. I mean, we've certainly seen pay-per-views that are worse than SmackDown today. So, I think that this is you guys certainly set the tone in Houston. Fort Worth is next, and then I don't even know where they're headed after that.
Dallas for
Monday Night Raw, which makes you wonder about Austin on Raw. I don't know where the hell he would fit in. Dallas, Texas is where Austin started. He got screwed on Austin 316 day during the pandemic, and it was just very awkward. So, yeah, there's a small chance. I'd say very, very small that Austin would show up on Monday night. But, you guys have broken the glass ceiling here. We are now through the Thunderdome era. We are officially back into normalcy, at least in terms of pro wrestling. So I'm glad you had a great time.
Oh, it really was. And I know that the returns might be a little disappointing for some people, but I really wasn't that disappointed. Like I said, I mean, the big picture, they're going to come. Just be patient. They're going to come. I know we'd like to see them in person, but I still feel like, all in all, it was a hell of a show. And I was satisfied. You know, money well spent, in my opinion.
Well, that's awesome. That's what you want. And I'm sure that's what WWE wants, is to make sure that they feel that you got your money's worth, because I'm sure they've missed the fans' money and you've missed being able to go to the shows. So I guess it's a win-win all the way around. So, Michael, thank you so much for coming on tonight. This is a special show for sure. I know that, again, guys, normally Michael does this by himself, but we had to link up here. He was live at the show. Fans were back. It felt like a pay-per-view, and yet we actually have a real pay-per-view in just a couple of nights, and then probably a pay-per-view quality show, hopefully, for Monday Night Raw in Dallas. So, Michael, thanks for popping on, and we'll be in touch very soon.
All right, anytime, Matt. Hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, man. Take care.
All right, talk to you soon.
Bye.